This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by Squarespace.com. Go to Squarespace.com and use offer code Duncan to get 10% off a brand new, beautiful website. Make your next move with Squarespace.com. Hello, friends. It's me, Duncan Trussell, and you're listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, and this intro is being recorded within the New York mansion of comedian Ari Shaffir, who headed out to Myanmar with a backpack filled with t-shirts, underwear, and I guess that's it. I don't even think there were pants in there, but he was kind enough to allow us being me and Cora, my wonderful girlfriend, to stay at this incredible mansion while we look for an apartment here in New York. And man, what a great pad Ari has. It's a three-story Victorian house in Manhattan, and it is sprawling. It's an incredible place. I think there's six bedrooms. There's a solarium. He's got a aviary with a live-in aviarian. I don't know what you call him. His name is Hans Schlant, and he takes care of Ari's birds, a lot of very rare birds, some not so rare, a couple of just basic carrier pigeons, an ostrich, some swans, a pelican, and a beautiful golden cage filled with multicolored parrots, some sparrows, and there's also a couple of aquariums filled with deadly snakes that he keeps near the birds for some reason. The birds don't seem to care. He's got a grotto surrounding a subterranean swimming pool that's 17 feet deep, little caves that the pool goes in and out of, some of these caves filled with shelves covered in a variety of different types of butt plugs, and there's entire rooms of this beautiful Victorian mansion filled with glory holes, and it really is a beautiful testament to Ari's hard work. It's beautiful, and I'm so grateful to him. I'm sure he's not listening to this wherever he happens to be roaming, but much thanks to him for giving us a launching pad to find a new place in New York City. And I have many grand proclamations and observations I want to make about New York City, but I think I need to be here for at least 3 days before I start deciding what this place actually is. Friends, we have a glorious podcast for you today with the creator of Drunk History, Derek Waters. We're going to dive right into it, but first, some quick business. This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by the gods and goddesses over at that digital Valhalla known as Squarespace.com. Now that your meat body has passed beyond the imaginary permeable temporal membrane that separated 2016 from 2017, it's time for you to make your next move with Squarespace.com. This is it, the beginning of the year. What better time than now to start your own business? It's not like the old days when you'd have to go to a rock quarry and gather together stones and create a brick and mortar shop in some blood and cum soaked section of your doom town. Now you can create a global enterprise just by building your own website. And God knows you don't want to get sucked into the demonic hypno vortex of a pseudo web designer who, rather than a heart, has a gargoyle living in his chest cavity. At least give Squarespace a shot first. All you have to do is go to squarespace.com, use offer code Duncan, and you'll get 10% off your first order. Sign up for a year, and you get a free domain name. Squarespace, it is a fantastic service. They've got 24/7 customer support. They've got award-winning templates that you can use to build a beautiful website on their all-in-one platform. There's nothing to install, patch, or upgrade ever. If you sign up for a year, you get a free domain name. All you got to do is go to squarespace.com, use offer code Duncan to show your support of the DTFH and to make your next move, to give it a shot. What do you have to lose? I've said it before. I'll never stop saying it. I know someone who sells their stinky socks online and makes money doing that. If she can make money selling your stinky socks, think what you can do with your beautiful, brilliant business idea, your amazing art, your restaurant, or whatever it is that you want to present to this beautiful world that we have all been blasted out of a vagina into. Squarespace.com. Use offer code Duncan. You'll get 10% off your first order. Sign up for a year and you'll get a free domain name. Make your next move with Squarespace.com. Here's some big news. I just wrote my very first comic strip with the brilliant comic book writer Donnie Cates and comic book artist Andy Bellinger. And this comic's called The Simulationists, and it will appear in this month's Heavy Metal Magazine. That's December's issue of Heavy Metal Magazine. I don't know if it's hit the shelves yet. I went to look for it at a Barnes & Noble today and couldn't find it. The old episode was on the shelves, but keep your eyes peeled for that. Also, for those of you who have been trying to buy tickets for this month's live Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast at the Bell House, we are sold out, but we might release a few tickets this month. If you can't make it to this month's show, we're going to be doing it monthly at the Bell House in Brooklyn, and we'll be doing another one next month, and that link will be at duncantrussell.com in the live events section. Also, for those of you living in New York, I'm going to be doing regular shows at The Stand and the New York Comedy Club, so keep your eyes peeled for that. I'd love to see you guys out there. A tremendous, all-reverberating, eternally echoing thank you to those of you who continue to use the Amazon link located at duncantrussell.com or to buy stuff from our shop. Thank you guys so much for supporting the DTFH. Now, without further ado, I welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast one of my dearest and longest friends, the creator of Drunk History, Derek Waters. Oh my God, Derek, thank God. If only you, my sweet audience, could have just witnessed the terrible struggle I just went through to get this working. Derek, thank you so much.
But you got through it. You got through it.
Yeah.
And you made it work. Have you ever done a podcast that you had to delete? I mean, as in, like, you had a guest that just didn't, you're like, this wouldn't be a good podcast.
Sometimes you get the feeling that this podcast is not one that you want to upload. Not necessarily because the guest is bad, mm-hmm. but because you start thinking, like, you know, there was a time, I'll give you an example. It really doesn't happen that much, but I'll give you an example. Good. There's one podcast I did not release, and I don't think my guest recognized that they were coming off as, like, really antagonistic and shitty and just generally, like, not cool. And you think, I'm not going to upload that because it's going to make people, like, say they're assholes, you know, right. And you don't want to do that to them. So that doesn't happen that much. So usually my experience is that people have something that they want to say and that it comes out if you, like, just give if you listen, mm-hmm. then it'll come out of them. That's usually it. But then sometimes people, very rarely, very, very rarely, what comes out of them, it could be a result of maybe being nervous about being on a podcast.
Sure. Yeah, or trying to be funny.
Trying to be funny, thinking too hard about how many people could possibly be listening, mm-hmm. and then accidentally, because of that, like, diluting what it is that wants to come out of them. And then that, then very rarely you think, you know what, rather than upload this and, like, maybe make them not seem as cool as I know they are.
But how did you tell him or her, like, hey, it just didn't record right, or what did you say? Like, so, to say that you weren't uploading it, did you tell him or her? What? Now you're not going to upload this?
I mean, this is sucks. Like, you're giving me, like, this is deep insider info. No,
I have to do the same thing. Sometimes people tell a story on the show, and I have to tell them it just didn't work. And it sucks saying that, because then in our head, the person saying it goes like, oh, is it going to sound like they suck? Like, no, it's not like you suck. It just didn't work.
You know, man, but the difference is that with your show,
I have an excuse.
You can be like, you are hammered.
Right. But most of the time it happens where they're not, and it just didn't work.
Here's the problem. The problem is, like, anyone who happens to listen to this that might have been on my podcast when it authentically erased the information, they're going to think, man, so when Duncan said that the podcast accidentally erased that was a result of me like not doing a great podcast. So
let me help.
Here's what they're gonna think. They're gonna think, listen, you fucking asshole. I drove to do your podcast,
mm-hmm.
and you're not uploading it because your weird judgment. You think that the internet's not gonna like me. But the truth of the matter is, there have been times. I'll just say this: there has been, in my recollection, out of the hundreds of podcasts that I've done, there have been two podcasts where the computer malfunctioned and erased the material.
Whoops.
And both of those times, that happened because of a desire in some way or another to, well, mostly just not upload a shitty podcast.
Can I help you and then hurt you?
Yeah, you already have hurt me. Like, I don't even know if I have the guts to upload this part of the podcast. It's like one of my big...
It's trust.
You're exposing one of my big secrets.
I'm not exposing. I was just asking if it ever happened. But let me help you. If you had told me that something that we had done here was erased, like it didn't work, and then you didn't invite me back to redo it, I'm well aware it didn't get erased.
Right.
They already know.
You're right.
It sucked.
Right.
Or you would have invited him back.
Yeah, you're right, man. Like, you know, I don't want to... I don't... With this podcast, I like Coast to Coast. And the reason I like Coast to Coast is because that host... And I like both the hosts. Some people, it's a controversy. I had George Norrie on. I guess some people are like Art Bell fans more than George Norrie, but whatever. I like them both.
Mm-hmm.
I just like Coast to Coast. I like the way that both of them have a way of just allowing their guests to be themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other shows that are really super funny, but it's an ambush show where the guest gets humiliated or the guest gets exposed or the guest gets attacked. And I never wanted this show to be that, because if somebody's coming onto the podcast, it's a favor to me. Like, anyone who's on my podcast, you're doing me a favor right now. You have come to my house, you're sitting down, you're going to spend time with me and let me talk with you and upload it. And it's a huge favor. So I can't work it out in my head that I would then like do anything to hurt you because of that. You know, there's some podcasts where I think guests are authentically worried about going on the podcast because they don't know the way the host is going to react to them.
Of course.
And there's radio shows like that too. And they're super funny radio shows, but I never wanted to do that. Like, it just feels like so disrespectful. Like, oh yeah, you drove up to my fucking house. Now I'm gonna hurt you. The result of you doing this is that it would hurt you. So now I don't know if that's cowardice on my part. I don't know if like I'm...
And the story you just said of why you didn't upload, it's like you were looking out for that person and yourself. Coast to Coast is called Coast to Coast. Your show is called the Duncan Trussell Family Hour.
Mm-hmm.
Your name is in it. So whatever you put up, you're vouching for. So when people come to your show, whatever you upload, when I listen to your show, I go, Duncan supports what I'm listening to.
That's right, man. And I'll tell you this. When I do Drunk History, now that I've done it so many times, I know you're going to make me look good. Like, somehow you're going to salvage out of a night of endless humiliations. Because I can even remember this last one that we just did. You know how, like, memories come to you?
Yeah.
So, like, anytime we do a Drunk History together, I will come to in the morning.
I hope you don't do a Drunk History without me. That would be really weird.
That would be hell. That would actually be hell. But whenever I come to, the parts that aren't complete amnesia are always the embarrassing parts. The one your brain returns to you. Remember when you did this?
Yeah.
Do you remember this moment?
Yeah.
And I can remember in the early days of us doing these things together, being like, man, he's going to use that. Like, that thing you did, what if they decide to put that up and it humiliates you? But now I trust you, so I know that, like, whatever we do, you're not doing it to make the host, to humiliate them. You try to somehow salvage some comedic wit out of that drunken night. So that is what I think that is. There's black magic and there's white magic. And when it comes to a show, what you're doing is white magic in the sense that when people come on it, they feel like, yeah, you're not going to use my vulnerability against me to hurt me for your own power or whatever.
Right.
It's, you know,
so and it's the same thing. It's like, it sounds selfish, but it's not. It's like, well, if I make someone look bad, I look bad. And also, I would never do that just because it's too easy. When someone's fucking drunk,
right,
the easiest thing is to make them look stupid.
Right.
But I want the audience to look stupid. I want the audience to be like, he's so fucked up. He doesn't know the fuck he's talking about. Oh, fuck, he just taught me something. Like, that's always that's the goal. Cool. And yeah, it can never be like, oh, look how dumb they are. No.
Yeah, because then that would just seem, that would come across as cruel.
And, yeah.
And it is cruel. I think there is a level of cruelty to it when you like drag a person into the public eye, expose something in them that. Now, that being said, man, there's like, I've seen interviews with people who like Rogan's podcast. Sometimes he's had people on his show whose ideas are so far away from his, mm-hmm. and it's a live show that he doesn't have any choice but to.
Right, he has to accept it.
He has to like fight it. There's a conflict that happens, and it's entertaining, and it's awesome. But mm-hmm. I don't know, man. Sometimes I think to myself, is it a mark that something's wrong with you that you don't want to do that? That you don't want to like have like a sort of intellectual debate with your guests and like try to like, you know, fight them. Because I know when I'm listening to the radio and people getting like a nice argument on the radio,
interesting.
It's great.
There's two sides.
It's really great entertainment.
But I think, in my own opinion, is that we're here to help people. So I think it's just finding out how you're going to help people. Like, but
that sounds stupid.
Huh?
That sounds fucking stupid.
Well, fuck you. I want to fucking help people, man. I'm tired of the sick and needy. I want to help them.
Ugh.
To be rich and greedy.
Well, I got to tell you, man, you sound like a fucking idiot. Let's cut to commercial.
Fuck you, man. Fuck this podcast. Erase it. Erase it. The computer's down.
The moment I did that, the whole thing was like sour. Is even joking.
But is that like when you listen to a podcast? Is it something that you like go like, oh man, what are they going to say? Or is it just interesting to hear people have conversations? To me, that's what I like. Is like just how people have dialogue between each other.
With this podcast, it's like, there's like epiphanous moments that happen for me. Like even now in this conversation, it's like opened up a line of thinking for me where I'll think about this for a while afterwards. Like it gives my mind chew toys to chew on for a little bit where like now I'll be thinking about like, yeah, man, like, well, Derek is honest when he says, you know, that just didn't work out. And now I'm thinking like, why wouldn't I just say that to my guests? Like that just didn't work out. Like, why would I lie? Like, why would I
Can I tell you why?
Yeah, please.
Because then they would say, well, can I come back? And you don't want them to come back. That's why you don't say it.
But why don't I want them to come back? Like that, like now what you're saying is making me think like, man, is there a way? Well, for one, I don't want them to come back because it's like, it's annoying for them to have to come back. It's just,
but you're speaking for someone else.
This is a thing that haunts me, that Ram Dass, one of my teachers, has taught mm-hmm. me, which his guru told him, which is, and you helped me figure this one out, because it's a great riddle that my mind is always trying to solve. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can help me solve it. Ram Dass's guru said to him, love everyone and tell the truth. Now, to make those two things line up is really tricky, man. Mm-hmm. It's a really tricky conundrum, you know, because it's like, well, if I love you, but I feel like you've done some shitty things and I'm angry at you, do I just tell you, I think you're an asshole. I love you, but you're a fucking asshole. Or does it mean like there's a deeper truth? In other words, when is it that we live in a world where you should constantly always tell the truth? And if you don't tell the truth, does that make you, are you corrupt? Are there permissible lies?
Well, that line you said, I love you, but I think you're an asshole. What I think about that line is, I love you, but I just can't be around you anymore, is saying, without saying you're an asshole, it's like, well, you don't want to be around an asshole. So just love them and say, I love you, but I don't want to be around you. Like, then you're being honest. Like, you're telling the truth without giving them a label that they're an asshole, because that's your opinion. That's not what they actually are.
Right.
When you say someone's an asshole, that's just your opinion.
Well, I mean, some people are assholes.
I agree.
I mean, this is, but they're not like they're, let me just clarify. So this is something I, for whatever reason, I've been thinking about lately. Okay, so I read this thing about why when we get sick, do we feel bad? Like, why do we get a fever? Why do we have an upset stomach? Why do we sneeze? Why do we cough? It seems like if a bacteria or a virus is invading your body, it would be benefit the virus or the bacteria to make you feel good. You know, like that's like, so that you, like, you would, the, to not make you sick, because then we're not going to seek cures. We're not going to try to eradicate the virus from our bodies. So the answer, I think this is like a Reddit, like, explain it to me like I'm five, which, do you ever go on Reddit?
Yeah.
So one of the great subreddits is explain it to me like I'm five. So it's like these really complicated things. Scientists will, or like smart people will, like, explain these really complicated things like you're a toddler, or a five-year-old. I think that's past toddler, but it really helps you understand shit. So basically the idea is, well, you get sick like that because the virus or the bacteria is using your coughing and your sneezing and your sweating as a way to spread itself out into the world, right? So when you find, when this thing that we call an asshole is actually a person who's been infected with a kind of mental virus, and this, and the asshole behavior is actually their sneezing, and that sneezing could theoretically spread their asshole virus out into the world. It's contagious.
Yeah.
So that means that when you're around an asshole, really you're around someone who's become infected with a kind of living form of negativity that's inside of them, and every time they do whatever the thing is that has no doubt gotten most of the planet to label them as an asshole, it's just no different than when you sneeze in an airport.
Right. Yeah.
They're just spreading the virus. So from that perspective, don't you want to, like, bring that, like, figure out a way to, like, cure the asshole? Like,
but that's not our job. Our job is to be ourselves and to love. And, you know, this is, I have two responses to it. Because one, I feel like whenever we're around anyone for too long, that both of our energies are going to become one. So if you're being an asshole and I'm like, you know, you have more charisma than I, so, like, I will become an asshole because I'm, like, vibing off your energy. Girls get their periods at the same time if they hang out with each other. I feel like guys have that with, like, if you're around an asshole friend who thinks negative, that eventually you start thinking like
that's
that.
That's right.
But also this thing is, like, why I'm not making this about, like, illness, but, like, a cold, a cough. Anytime I get a cold, which I have a small one now, I feel like it happened for my body to remind me, like, how grateful I am for health. Like, they come in specific times in my life where I'm like, oh, it gives you time to reflect. But I'm not saying that about, like, that's why people get terminally ill. I'm just saying, like, whenever I get sick, I'm like, oh, this is a good, you know, a reflection on, like, looking back at, like, oh, yeah, I have a good life. It's okay. Like, everything's all right. This will go. This will soon pass.
That is such a great feeling. And that, you know, like, you hear in other cultures, like, they have words for stuff that we don't have words for. Like, the classic being, like, Schadenfreude or whatever they call it. The joy at another suffering, right? German word. But in the same way, there needs to be a word. And there probably is in some culture, that word for when you get better after being sick for a long time. And it's like, I'm back to myself again.
Yeah, everything looks better. Everything looks better. Yeah. You talk nicer. You're like, yeah. Yeah. there's sunlight after the dark. You just gotta, you gotta go through the dark to see the sunlight, though.
You gotta go through the dark, and when you're in the dark,
you gotta know that there's light.
I mean, what's the great prayer? How does it go?
There's a lot.
Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. And I love that. You know, that prayer is such a great prayer because the valley of the shadow of death, well, that's human life.
Yeah, that's where we're all going.
No, that's us now.
Right, we're in the shadow of death.
Yeah, right. So I never got that till way down the line because I'd heard that prayer so much. But you, the valley of the shadow of death is human incarnation. So in the human existence, we're constantly shadowed by death.
Death even is always our shadow.
Right. Oh, it's so genius. Even though I walk in a world where the shadow of death is upon me, I'm not going to be afraid because you are with me. Oh, yeah. Jesus. People were so smart. People, because you don't come up with a, you, first of all, that you don't come up with that kind of prayer if you're bullshitting.
Right.
Like no one said, that was not a guy working in like a prayer writing company where they're like, write a good prayer, Jerry. That's a prayer.
One that will be used in Coolio's music.
Did he use
in Gangster's Paradise? Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. I haven't listened to it in a while.
It's crazy to think that if you write a good enough prayer, it could end up in a Coolio song.
Yeah.
Like thousands of years, it just trickles through humanity. Pilgrims say it. People in ships sailing from Europe to come to America, muttering that in storms with waves crashing into the ship while lightning's blasting. People saying that prayer on those ships. People saying that prayer as they're dying in their deathbed. People, and then Coolio's like, fuck, I'm going to use that too.
Yeah, it's so much better than a retweet.
But it's pretty, yeah, but it's, that kind of stuff is like trippy to me when you think it, at some point, I don't know who wrote that prayer. Is that from the Bible? Is that like, so it's, that's a psalm or something?
Really, Mark, we'll have to look it up.
But at some point, someone sat down and said that to themselves and then repeated it to someone who was like, holy shit, that is heavy, man. And then, do you mind if I say that prayer sometimes, too? And then it spread.
Yeah, when it's good, it's good. And those are why we, that's the way we'll learn, is from our past. And they know better than we do. And when we act like we know more than they do, we're fucked.
Right. You mean
just anyone from the past knows more than we do.
The progenitors of the prayer, like people who are saying that?
Yes, it worked. And it's continued for thousands of years.
How does the whole thing go? But that's, I think that with Christianity in particular, when people think of Christianity, they have so many ideas of what it's like versus what it really is. Like they don't realize that Christians, like true Christians, are suffering in this very sweet way because of the death of a being 2,000 years ago. That every day they're like still suffering from that.
Right, yeah.
That always blows my mind. Like I don't know if you saw the you know, they just opened up Jesus's tomb, you know about that?
Yeah.
And there's a great picture of the Coptic, I think they're Coptics, they're the monks, the people who take care of that tomb,
right,
standing around when they opened it up for the first time in hundreds of, who knows how long. And everyone standing there, the look on their face is the look of someone who just lost a loved one, staring into the place that their body was placed. Yeah, it's cool. I don't think people realize that with Christianity, if you want to look at it from a historical perspective, that many Christians have skipped the 2,000 years.
Yeah.
And they're not experiencing a death as though it happened 2,000 years ago. They're experiencing a death as though it happened today.
Right, yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
It is crazy. And, you know, as a Christian, I also always feel like the need to remind anytime I talk about it is like, well, I found this faith. That doesn't mean that faith works for you. This is just something that works for me. And It's just finding your faith and finding your peace and what works for you, you know?
Yeah.
Something works differently for everybody, you know? As long as you have faith, I think.
What's curious about Christianity is that if I were to say, you know, I found that in the noble truth of Buddhism, there's peace for me. I don't have to preface that with, but if you have something else that you find, but with Christianity, it's stigmatized.
Okay. Well, it's a little different than what you're saying, but I didn't want to stop because I love what you're saying. But it's Psalm 23, I believe, 23:4.
Right.
And it's
you just know that. That's so wild.
Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me.
That's it?
Yeah.
That's not how it ends.
Yeah. I mean, that's the verse.
Goodness will follow me. Do you have the next verse memorized?
Mm-mm.
Goodness and mercy will follow me through every day of my life or something. Goodness and mercy. These guys, they knew.
Well, this is a good one. Yeah, yeah. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thou rod and thy staff, they comfort me.
It keeps going.
There's so many different versions of it, but
it goes like this.
According to
my remembrance of it, it goes.
Yeah.
Oh, it starts.
You
with,
remember
oh,
here, weird. Here, yeah, this you is look weird it, when you remember.
This is how it goes. Because we're reading. Oh, now as I recall, it just
appeared.
I remembered. I memorized this sometime earlier today. It goes. I'll read the whole thing. I mean, I will recite.
You'll remember the whole thing.
The Lord is my shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
I will not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures.
No, the Lord is my shepherd. There is nothing that I shall want, right?
I shall not want.
Mm.
There's nothing I shall not want. I mean, that's just bad grammar.
Sorry.
I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. I'll tell you, man, Old Testament prayers are like the ultimate smackdowns to me.
I agree.
That is an insult. That is a cold, hard burn.
Can I tell you my favorite one?
Yes.
This is from Jeremiah, and it was, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." I've had that on my fridge since I was 19.
Say it again.
"For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future."
See, now that's the kind of prayer that will make you cry when you are
broke.
Yeah,
it's a good one when you're lost.
Because that's the thing is when you're really busted up and you're in trouble.
But that's the thing. It's the same thing with sickness and health. It's like, let's remember what we felt like when we were sick, when we're not sick. And the same thing is like when we're not broke, when we're not struggling, let's remember the things that got us through. That it's God, it's prayer, it's strength,
yeah, but
it's
come on,
love.
You got to think back, man.
Well, I will. I'll think back.
Think back to when we were performing at the Martini Lounge.
Oh, man.
Think back to those days.
Yeah.
They were romantic days.
Yeah, they're cool to think about, but not to live in again.
But when we were back there, like, you are, like, I'm buying ramen,
I had green bean sandwiches, like, every night, and I was fine with it. But I wouldn't be fine with it now.
I'll tell you this.
But my point is that prayer still works to us today.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, because things, I mean, the bad news for people who are currently eating green bean sandwiches is when your version of God pulls you out of that mess and you find yourself in some form of opulence, you'll realize that the sorrows continue.
Yes.
But at least, but I can remember at one point, man, God, this is something I've been thinking about lately. It's just how absolutely angry I have been throughout my life. But I can remember at one point, in the midst of like a long period of poverty, like the long period of just dead broke, car almost getting repossessed, just not enough money to eat for a week. You know, like when you look at your bank account, you're like, well, and or you are like thinking about your money in terms of how much you can overdraft mm-hmm. on your bank account, a really rotten kind of loan. So I can remember at one point thinking, this will never end. Mm. My entire life is going to be one of struggle and poverty and gnashing my teeth in the night and contemplating suicide.
You thought it would never end.
Yeah, I thought I thought that the unrelenting poverty would never let up.
Where was your hope?
I didn't have hope. There were times when I was hopeless. Like there was times when I just assumed that there was no hope for any kind of.
This was just your life.
Yeah, because it's you look at the news, this is the life. Like some people. That is life. Mm-hmm. It's just an unrelenting series of disappointments ending in a kind of confused death. And I thought I just kept thinking like you'll probably be gritting your teeth at night for the rest of your life. So that's why prayers like that, when you get into that situation, that's why good friends are important. Some kind of spiritual community is important mm-hmm. and some kind of like, any even a dabbling interest in some kind of real spirituality.
Remember when we went to church together?
I'll never forget it. You know why I'll never forget it, man? I'll never forget when we went to church because the church that you took me to, you've taken me to two churches, mm-hmm. but the second church you took me to, when they were doing the communion, you went up an aisle and there was a woman who was giving the communion wafers. And she was saying I can't remember the name, what that's called, but this is my body, eat this in remembrance of me, this is my blood. Mm-hmm. And when she said that to me and I looked at her as she said it.
This is the body of Christ, this is the blood.
Yes. And when she said that to me, I realized she believed it. Like she was saying it to me with the brokenhearted joy of a person who's giving you the flesh of someone that they're in love with. And that I always refer to that. It's like, that's what Christianity looks like. Because this was, I don't know who that person was.
Right.
I'll never know who that person was. But whoever that person was, that moment, that ritual that they were engaged in was not some kind of postmodern symbolic, what this actually represents is the ability for man to aspire to something higher. That person really believed that Jesus just got crucified. There was no time there.
Right.
Now, to talk about that very quickly, in Christianity especially, at this Ram Dass retreat I just went to, there was a woman that I met who was a grief counselor. And what she told me was, if you have experienced loss of someone who's died in your life, then you know there's no such thing as time. Because grief doesn't have anything to do with time.
Wow.
So when you're thinking back to the person dying, there's no time there at all. And when you run into an authentic Christian, it doesn't matter that Jesus died thousands of years ago. They're still grieving and simultaneously celebrating that event right now, like it happened just now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's really psychedelic about Christianity. Your Twitter, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
We put our head in the sand because we are surrounded by this unremitting love. And to have to face the love sucks. Because, you know, like, I'll tell you something that really sucks. Here's something that really sucks. You're in an argument with someone and you want to be right.
Of course.
And you look at them and you're arguing with them and then you think to yourself, you ask this very simple question. What do they want right now? Why is this person doing this? What do they want?
They want to be right.
They want to be right. But then you go deeper into, like, what do they want? What does this person want? And you realize they want to be loved.
Who doesn't?
Right. And so then the person that you were just fighting with, that you'd managed to turn into this demon, this monster, someone who's completely, like, out of their fucking gourd, you realize, like, oh, shit. This is a person who needs me to acknowledge how important they are to me.
Yeah.
I have to sacrifice my ego. I have to crucify my ego and, like, love this person. I have to let this person... I have to... Okay, to put it another way, this is why I love Jesus. Praise God.
Amen.
Jesus was about open borders. So the idea is, like, a lot of people have a wall around their heart, which is keeping out the perceived refugees that want to enter into their space that they think are not safe to allow into the...
It's just protection. We're protecting ourselves.
That's it. So this Christianity is the idea of a being that had open borders around their heart and said, everyone can come in. Everyone can come in. Mm-hmm. And some of you that I let in are going to kill me. And I'm going to let you kill me. Because I'd rather you kill me than for me to close my heart off to you. That equation is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And there's nothing, I think that's one of the most refined articulations of bhakti, of love, which is like, yeah, I'll let you in. You'll kill me, but I'll let you in. You'll kill me, but I'm going to let you in.
Yeah.
Nothing, that's radical.
Yes.
What's more radical than that?
I don't know. It's the ultimate love.
It's the ultimate, man. And you know, I can't do it. Like, I, you know, like when I, whatever petty, like, little war I have going on with whatever person in whatever particular time in my life where it's like, yeah, that one's out.
Right.
He's
right.
out.
Yeah.
You know, like that, to let them all in. Oh, yeah, you're going to use me. I get it. You're going to use me. You're going to use me. You're going to take away something that I love. You're going to infiltrate my life. And you're going to try to hurt me, and I'm just going to let you do it. Because I would rather, and this is something Ram Dass says that I like, I would rather love than be right.
Yeah, it's strong. It's really strong.
Who can do that?
Nobody. No one can do that. I mean, yeah. I mean, what I always try to do with people I like or don't like is whether you agree or disagree with someone, is that thing that you're saying is that we all want to be loved, and it's just like, how are you going about it to show me that you just want to be loved? And so, like, we're all insecure, and when I meet someone that is aggressive, in my head, I'm just like, all right, you're insecure, but in my opinion, that's not the right way. Well, let me make more sense. In short, we're all insecure, and I don't judge anyone that because we're all dealing with it, but it's how you react to the insecurity. It's like, are you going to come at it with aggression, or are you going to come at it with honesty? You know, and that we're all holding back this insecure thing, but if someone's a dick, fuck off. I mean, I love Jesus, but I will... say, nice to meet you, and keep walking.
Cause there you go.
You got to walk on.
Well, quick story. Can I tell you a quick story?
Please.
So this is a story that I can't remember which book it popped up in. It's a really intense story there. So, God, I wish I could remember his name. This is a martial artist. He'd been studying like Taekwondo or something in Japan. And he'd been studying it for like a few years. He'd been in Japan for a few years studying it, gotten like...
This is a yoga teacher that's raped everybody?
Yeah, I'll get to the rape part. Hold on, let me build up to it. It's like, no, it's not a yoga teacher. This is a guy who's like been studying Taekwondo in Japan. And his teacher, like a great martial artist, like Karate Kid style teacher, kept telling him, you know, the ultimate realization of this discipline is that you will never fight again. Like, if you really learn this, you will not fight. because this is about diffusing conflict. It's not about like physical violence, even though that's, it's a martial art. So it really is about like this, it's an embodied philosophy, right? So this guy's studying, getting really good at it, gets on a train, and he's on a train in Japan, and this big fucking drunk Japanese dude gets on the fucking train and is being really aggressive. Like, really aggressive. Mm-hmm. Like, he shoves a lady, you know, like, he's being, like, violent. And he's like, violent. And so this guy is like, this is it. This is why I study Taekwondo. I'm going to get to, like, take down this fucking drunk, violent asshole. So, like, he stands up, ready to, like, eliminate this threat.
Right.
And the drunk sees him stand up and looks at him like, great, now I get to fight. This is good for the drunk. It's good for both of them, right? Yeah. They're both excited now.
Yeah.
And so then, like, then sitting in a seat is this old, like, Japanese man who looks up at the drunk and says to him, have you been drinking? And the drunk guy is like, yes. And the Japanese guy's like, sit down.
Sit down.
The drunk guy sits down with him, and the Japanese guy says, what have you been drinking? And the drunk guy's like, sake. And the Japanese old man is like, oh, sake. I love sake. He's like, I love sitting when the sun's going down with my wife, and we drink sake, and it's so nice. I love sake. Mm-hmm. Do you have a wife? And the drunk guy starts crying and says, my wife died. Like, his wife died, like, a month ago or something. And he just starts crying, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't have anyone anymore. And as the story goes, this martial artist gets off the train, and this drunk is now, his head is now in the old man's lap.
No.
And he's sobbing, and the old man's, like, petting his head. Mm-hmm. And he says to himself, that was when I saw true, like, what a true martial artist looks like. Because even that asshole inside has experienced pain, loss, suffering.
And that's why he's angry, but that doesn't mean it's right to be angry.
No, but it doesn't mean it's right to be angry. But it's not about him being angry. Mm-mm. It's about the sophistication of the person near that person. Yeah, what level of skillfulness are you at?
Right.
Where are you at? Are you, what level, like, I know where I'm at. I'm at the level of skillfulness where I'll, like, be like, oh, I gotta use the bathroom.
Right, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? I'll get away.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I can't do anything. I don't know what to do. But some people are at such a level of skillfulness when it comes to encountering beings like that, that they can, in that encounter, shift that person into a place of vulnerability, and then from that place, theoretically, heal them. I can't do it. You can't. Not many people can do it.
No.
In the same way that if I got in a, like, actual fight with someone, I'd probably get my ass kicked because I don't know how to fucking fight. I got a bag back, slip disc. I'm scared. But the idea is, like, in the same way that people can, like, become proficient at MMA, people can become proficient at, like, physical fighting, people can actually become proficient at healing instantly in the moment. Those people exist. And I think Jesus was the ultimate representation of what that looked like.
Let's play a couple scenarios. I got some ideas off the top of my head, like, we're in a bar and be aggressive with me and I'll have a response and let's see how it goes.
Okay. Dude, you're sitting in my fucking seat. I just got up to smoke a cigarette. Get the fuck out of my seat.
Who hurt you?
Fuck you, pussy.
They didn't mean to hurt you.
You're a cuck. Get the fuck out of here. No, man, I know. But it's like, I know. But does it ever really work like that? Like, usually the way it works.
What if I, like, grabbed you by your head and then whispered in your ear, who hurt you?
It wouldn't work.
A whisper helps. No?
You know, man, sometimes you're going to have to fight.
Yeah.
But the concept is really quite beautiful, which is that prior to, because I've seen, I've watched like real like people who are true black. This is a fucking anecdote that I just told you, and it may not be real at all. It might just be some cheesy new age dude wrote a fake story. But I've seen a version of it that isn't so sappy. Like I've been around, not naming anybody, but I've been around people who are deadly, who are trained for their whole lives to fight, and I've watched an aggressive person come up to them wanting to fight. And I've watched them diffuse it in the most graceful, skilled way, even though if they didn't want to diffuse it, you know what I mean? Like even, I've watched, it's like watching a toddler come up to a pit bull, completely unaware of the fact that like,
it's a pit bull.
And pulling its ears.
Right.
Like, yeah. Not, by the way, pit bull lovers out there, I love them too. I'm sorry I used that as an example of a pit bull.
A dog.
Sweet fucking animals.
Yeah.
Most of them are so sweet. But I've watched, but they do have a very, they can bite really hard.
Of course.
So I've watched drunks come up to some of my friends who are deadly and start pulling their ears. And I've watched them completely diffuse it so that there's no violence. Mm-hmm. And you can do that.
Yes, you can.
You just have to usually overcome your ego. Because your ego wants to win. But if you like let your ego down a little bit, let the drunk think that maybe they could have kicked your ass.
Just let them get it all out and then kill them with kindness.
That is so sophisticated.
It is, yeah. Yeah. It's, yes. And it's so unsophisticated when someone just comes at you with words and anger. It's just like, what are you doing? No point.
I'll tell you what they're doing. This goes back to what we're talking about before. They're spreading disease.
Yes.
That's what it's like a person sneezing in an airplane. When a person comes up to you all angry and pissed and their chest puffed out, they don't even realize it, but they're spreading a kind of mental disease through the world. They've been, and like guaranteed that person is puffing up to you, trying to infect you with their insanity by making you punch them, which is the virus entering into you and then like proceeding to spread to the people around you. That person, at some point, we don't know when, could have been last year, a day ago, 3 minutes ago.
Either way, they're infected.
Something happened to them where some darkness spread into them. So it's, you know,
it's the same thing of like drug addicts trying to get drug on you because they don't want to be alone. They want to infect it so they're not the only one.
That's right.
I'm not into The Walking Dead, but I understand like zombies are like that too, right?
Yeah, that's the concept.
We all just, and not to bring it back to another thing, is like that's why I personally believe whatever church you like is why church has, you know, been around forever, because we as humans don't want to be alone and we want to feel like we're one. It's why I believe sports has always existed and worked, is that you can be one. We want to be one. Our instincts say we all want to be together.
That's right.
We want to be together.
Yeah.
And it's just figuring out how.
You need the community.
Yes.
Let's face it. You need it. And a lot of people, man, they don't have it.
No, I know, because they're scared of love.
They're scared to get in their car and like drive to a church or a synagogue or wherever because they don't want to like
give. They're scared. They're scared of getting hurt.
Look, when I don't go to a church, I'm not thinking I don't want to give. I'm scared of getting hurt. I'm usually thinking I don't want to get up and drive to a church.
You're tired. It's Sunday.
Yeah, I wish that it was. I'm not. I don't want to get hurt today. It's like I'm not going to go fucking do that. But maybe underneath that is I don't want to get hurt. Maybe underneath it is I don't want to risk. I don't want to be vulnerable. I don't want to feel around other people. I don't want to expose myself. You know, that's the culture that we're in right now. And, you know, just, you know, we have different what's called satsangs. Like you
what
have
that? What's that? Satsang?
Satsang. So like it's a group. It's the spiritual community.
Okay.
So my spiritual community is like the Ram Dass people, and I go to these wherever they're at whenever they get together, and it always transforms my life because these are like you get the entire spectrum of like. You get a wonderful spectrum of realization. I'm on the lower end of the spectrum, but further up, there are people who just really have perfected and refined their ability to love. Like this rabbi I keep talking about, she like, you know, goes to, she like, her whole life is based on healing communities. Mm-hmm. That's it. Her whole life is like, how do I make divisions in communities heal? That's her whole, she's dedicated her whole life to that.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. And, you know, and but you get the whole spectrum. Mm-hmm. So you get to see all of it. You know, it doesn't matter where you land on the damn thing. Like, you it's just you're at where you're at. The point is that once you get into a bubble where it's filled with different people like that, you can't help but be inspired. That doesn't matter if it's people associated with Ram Dass, with Christianity, with some church. These bubbles happen. A bubble where groups of people have gathered together, and within that group of people, there's a shared intention to their best of their ability, from the weakest to the strongest, to make the world a better place. That's where you need to be. Get yourself in one of those bubbles. And if you'll know if when you find the right bubble, you might.
You always know. You always know when something's going right or something's going wrong. We feel it. And we just have to acknowledge it.
You're in a bubble, aren't you?
A bubble of what?
You got a community.
Yeah. I got a community. Yeah. I like my bubble. I love the people that I love. I love the people that I'm around, you know, and I'm lucky enough to mostly pick the ones that I'm around, and then the ones that come in that I didn't expect to come. You have to find something good in everybody, because there is good in everybody, but it doesn't mean you're going to get along with everybody. You know, I remember, like, at church once, someone came up to me like, hey, man, we should write a script together. And I was like, just because we believe in the same God doesn't mean I like you. You know what I mean? Like, remember, just because like you share this thing doesn't mean you share everything. And I think people put pressure on it, like, oh, if you're like this, then you're like that. No, we're all different. We all want and need the same thing, but that doesn't mean we're all alike.
That is absolutely. That is one of the primary mistakes people make, which is like, because I love you doesn't mean I like you. And because, like, I'm attempting to... Because, like, in my state, wherever I'm at right now, I'm trying to achieve some state of connectivity with people mm-hmm. around me doesn't mean that right now, at the second where I'm at, I like you. And, like, that's why, like, you need in a good spiritual community, you need acceptance of the fucked upness of people in the community. Like, there needs to be a general understanding that many of us right now are out of our fucking minds.
Yes.
At any given time, some relatively large percentage of us are going crazy.
Yeah.
And hopefully the rest of us, at least at this moment, aren't going crazy. And it's a dance that keeps switching back and forth so that the crazy ones can be comforted by the non-crazy ones. And when the non-crazy ones go crazy and the crazy ones that have been healed by the non-crazy ones are in a state of rationality, they can heal them. And it creates this like beautiful dance of healing, which is like, if I'm able to right now, if my head is in the right place, I'm going to try to be there for you. But if I'm not there for you right now because I'm going nuts because we're in a fucking incarnation that is defined by not knowing what's truly going on, then will you be there for me?
Yeah.
That's why you need it, man.
Do you ever feel like the calmer you are, the more like balanced and like good head you have on your shoulders, that's when the crazies come. That's when the crazies come, is because they can sense it. Like, oh, this is someone that exuding goodness, and I need that right now. So I used to go like, what the fuck are all these crazy people doing? And then I'm like, oh, maybe I'm doing something that's, they're coming at me in a weird way, but they just, maybe they want to like be calm, but they don't know how to go about it. I don't know. That sounds stupid.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. I'll tell you what it sounds like. Listen to this. Hold on one second. I got to play this for you now. Hang on. Let me find it. We're going to play a clip from Jesus Christ Superstar. Oh.
Make me cry. Christ, what would you touch? Will you heal me, Christ? Will you?
I haven't heard that since I lost my identity.
But that's from, I think, the Synoptic Gospels, where Jesus says, heal yourself. So he's surrounded by people. And like, the message that comes is, you are responsible for healing yourself.
Yes, and that is, we're going to edit this to make it not sound so whatever.
We don't have to edit it.
No, I just want to say that, like, there's stigma. Here's the thing that I do, like, I really, for me, in my life, that's helped me. And like, when people are like, oh, what does prayer do? Or like, God, please help me, like, get a job. Like, yeah, you have to go get a job. You can pray. Like, God gave you the brain that you have, the legs that you have, and the gift that you've been giving. And you can't rely everything on God. But one thing that has always helped me is, like, when something's really stressful is, and people use this phrase, I think, and abuse it, but I always say I'm just going to give it to God. That doesn't mean I'm going to, like, lay down and be like, I'm just going to give it then. It's like, no, this is really stressing me out. I don't know how this is going to be fixed. God, you are stronger than me, and I'm going to give it to you, and tell me what to do.
That's right.
You know, give, like, but you can give it to God, but you still need to, like, walk the walk and not just be like,
Yeah, you relinquish your control to the concept of some higher intelligence.
Yeah.
And by the way, man, that is magic. Like, what you just described is what, from a different lens, what you would call, like, a basic magical system, which is that when you are experiencing any kind of difficulty in your life, whatever it may be, there's only a certain amount of stuff that you can do. Like, anything that you're doing to try to overcome a problem is its own form of magic. But to add to it the idea that, like, you're relinquishing your control to the faith that we live in a perfect universe where exactly what's happening is perfect because it, the universe is all part of a divine intelligence, mm-hmm. It can release a lot of the stress that comes and a lot of the guilt and a lot of the obvious feeling of not being powerful enough to take care of whatever it is you're trying to take care of. So it's useful. You know? I'm just sick of this stigmatized Christianity. It's just so annoying. And it's like everyone's missing out on a really beautiful religion.
But, you know, they're lost. You know, you do, not they're lost, but that sounds negative. But it's just in time. I believe all in time that we just, like, we'll find the light that, you know, leads us. And like, when you're sad, what are you going to do? Just stay sad? Or are you going to try to figure out what will make you happy?
Well, sometimes you're so fucking sad that you can't even
think. You can't see the light.
Yeah, and you're so, and somewhere in there, like somewhere right around there, that's where you start doing crazy shit.
In that book that I had you read, Love Yourself as If Your Life Depends on It, I'm going to misquote it, but there's a thing in there where he talks about, you know, when you're sad, like, think about when you go into, you're in a dark room, but there's windows, and the windows are covered in cobwebs and, like, soot, and just think about walking over that window and moving and washing off all that soot, because there is light, and it's up to us to realize, is there light in this room or not, and we're we have the capability of finding that light.
That's right. Yeah, that's great. And when you're in that state of absolute dejection,
yeah.
You know, I saw this documentary on a guy who the internet like helped lose weight. It was a guy like this morbidly
Jared,
not the Subway dude. It was a morbidly obese guy who started going on a weightlifting forum and showing pictures of himself as being just insanely fat. And this has always stuck with me since I saw it. Someone on the forum said to him, "Just this guy's morbidly obese. Like we're talking like." Like
800?
No, I don't think it was at 800, but he's like he's going to die from his fat.
Okay.
And someone on the forum said to him, just start jiggling around, like in your chair. They're like, just move. Just move. You don't have to even get out of your chair in front of your computer. Just start like shaking your body. Lift your arms up and down. Move your body around. That's enough. Just that for today.
Just move.
Just jiggling around.
Yeah.
Jiggling around today is enough for today, right? And I think when you look at your life from that perspective, when you're completely in the state of like, I don't feel connected to any kind of love. Mm-hmm. I don't feel any kind of sense that there's like a God. No way there's a God. Certainly not a Jesus, you psychotic cultist. And also, I don't feel like most people in the world are good. I think most people in the world are confused and evil. And I think that most people are out to get me. And I don't really believe any of this shit at all. I feel completely numb, really empty, completely numb and empty and pointless. And I really can't wait to die. And I'm only barely hanging on here because I hope I die. I don't feel anything at all. When you're in that state, that is where you just jiggle around, right? Mm-hmm. By jiggling around, you make one tiny, minuscule movement in the direction of God.
Yeah.
Well, the tiniest step. We're talking the tiniest. You don't believe it. Of course you don't fucking believe it. It sounds insane. It sounds like delusion of a fucking acid casualty. Fine. But you take one little step in the direction of that delusion and see what happens. The tiniest step. In the same way that if you were like near a black hole and you got just close enough to the black hole so that the gravity of the black hole started pulling you in. That's all you got to do. Now you're going into a black hole. This is the opposite.
Right.
It's not a black hole. It's a white hole. We're talking about the source of all things. If you just intellectually allow yourself the tiniest, you just fudge the equation enough to allow yourself a little momentary delusion that there could be a super intelligent love force in the universe that is completely infatuated with you and wants you to be okay. If you just do that, even in your worst state, you will begin to experience relief.
And to remember, like just taking a moment and being so frustrated, why is that? And like, what if I'm not in charge? Well, guess what? You're not in charge.
Yeah.
And to accept that we're responsible for a lot of things, our actions and what we I believe a true character is how we respond to the things that come to us. But to accept the things that come to us have nothing to do with us, that we are not in charge, and that is God. And some are good and some are bad, but it's how we respond to the things that come to us.
What a relief.
And the thing I want to say, too, is like to be weary of like to accept that everyone wants to be a community, that we crave that. But there are people that go about it in the wrong way. And I was remembering when I first moved here, I was at Second City, and this guy I didn't know, I don't remember his name. All I remember is like he wore a leather coat and reeked of cologne. And I remember one day after improv class, he was like, "Hey, man, what's your dream?" Mm. And I was like, are you fucking with me? Because I love fucking with people too. And he's like, "No, I'm serious. Like, what's your dream?" And I was like, I guess if you're being honest, to someday make movies with my friends. And he put his arm around me and he goes, "Well, let's do it, brother." And I remember going, snake. Oh, and then can I just tell one other story in that? Love yourself if your life depends on it. I'm paraphrasing it, but it's a snake story, which I just thought.
But hang on.
Yes, please.
Wasn't that guy who put his arm around you Steven Spielberg?
I know. Yeah. Yeah, the leather coat he was wearing was an E.T. leather coat.
And that is the story of Drunk History.
Yes.
Steven Spielberg called Comedy Central, and because of that...
Here I am.
Derek...
He has risen.
Thank you so much.
No, that was it. Let me see if you know it. He has risen. Duncan, I'm going to teach you.
He has risen.
He has risen indeed.
Oh, is that what you say?
Mm-hmm.
He has risen indeed.
He has risen. He has risen indeed.
Oh, is that the code?
Mm-hmm.
Are you a traveling man?
I was going to sing that song, but I won't.
Derek, thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you, Duncan, for having me, and thank you for being you. And I love you.
Drunk History season. I love you, too. Drunk History season what?
I don't know.
Do you really not know? Four.
And we're about to do five.
What's on the air right now?
Four. Yeah.
Guys, I'm going to have all the links to Drunk... If somehow you haven't seen Drunk History, I'll have links to the Drunk History.
Duncan is the scientist behind it all.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are. But without Tesla, I don't think the show would exist.
Stop. I disagree with that. I wholeheartedly disagree with it. But I'm so glad that I get to be a part of it because it is the coolest show.
You know, I can't wait for people to see your new one.
We'll see. When does that come out? That's like 6 months at least.
I don't know. Yeah.
All right, man. Well, thank you, Derek. And Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Duncan. Love you.
Love you. Thanks for listening, everybody. That was Derek Waters. You'll find all the links you need to connect with Derek in the comments section of this episode. Much thanks to Squarespace.com for sponsoring this episode. Remember to go to Squarespace.com and use offer code Duncan to get 10% off a brand new site. Thank you guys for continuing to listen to this podcast. Happy holidays. We'll see you soon with an interview with the great Dr. Jordan Peterson. That's coming soon. Hare Krishna.